Welcome to the Literary Escape Podcast, the only podcast that serves both readers and authors of historical Christian romance. We read, discuss, review, and rate books in this unique romance subgenre, and sprinkle in a few contemporary Christian suspense books. Authors, we bring you inside tips and tricks from those who have gone before you. Then we bring both readers and authors together for fun-filled live Q&As. Literary Escape is the one-stop shop for both readers and authors to connect, learn, and grow together. Let's dive into this adventurous episode. Welcome back, everyone, to another Literary Escape podcast, and I am so excited to have Sarah with us here again. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be joining with you.
I always have a blast just reconnecting with you. And I think this might be your second or third interview with us.
Yeah. We did one for the Cripple Creek series, and we did one preparing for KCWC 1 year.
Yes, yeah. That's right. So this time we have been featuring your Convenient Risk series, which we love. But we did have a question for you. Did you plan on it having this many books? Because I think are you up to 8 or 9 now in this?
Eight okay. books in the series. That is a good question. All of my books were planned as standalones. And in the meantime, characters keep talking to me. So the Christmas novella was one of those, like, I want to put a Christmas book out. I love Convenient Risk. And so I thought, well, let me follow that up with a Christmas novella. And then I just felt like Cutie needed to tell his story after the first book and all of the stuff that happened. And so then I told his story. And then I thought, no, now the other ranch hands need their stories. So it just kept going.
It did. And we didn't get to do this one, but you have a ranch hands collection of short stories, right?
Well, I have a collection of short stories that feature Cook and Owen, Uncle Owen and Cook. Okay. That there's one for every month of the year. It's 12 short stories in that collection. And I do have a Ranch Hands collection, which is basically the Convenient Risk and the other three Ranch Hands stories in one volume. So it doesn't have the second book. It has the first, third, fourth, and fifth books.
Okay. All right. And I see that up here on your website here too. So, and I will put a link to Sarah's website. So if you want to check out her books, you'll have a direct link so you can check that out. Okay. So when you think about that series, by the way, and let's just share the news because I'm really excited. There is another one coming.
Yes. This is one that has been long coming, I think, like since I wrote maybe book number 3 or 4, I thought, wouldn't it be neat if the series could end with the story of the little boy from the first book. So it has been through developmental edits. It's in line edits right now. And then we'll format it and get it out. So it's coming early May.
Soon. It's just right around the corner. That is very exciting because he is a character you see through the whole series and, you know, readers get attached to him. And it is kind of nice to see what they do when they're all grown up.
All grown up.
Do you think that'll be the last one?
I think so. But then again, I thought that Love in Cripple Creek would be the last one of that series. And now, for those of you that have read Love in Cripple Creek, the hero's sister, Anya, has been whispering in my ear. She's been telling me she needs a story. So who knows?
We did that series a while back, so it would be exciting to go back to it. So is that the book you're working on right now, you think?
Well, I'm actually working on the third book in the Railway Romance series. So we've got Laura and then Annie, and then this one is about Annie's friend Emma.
Okay, so we haven't read that series yet, but I remember you sharing, I think back when you were working on book one, it is a very interesting story that you're kicking off with in book one. Mm-hmm. So I would say to anyone listening that we haven't been able to get to it yet, but I would highly recommend that series for sure. Because it was very intriguing what you shared.
Okay, I have some questions. Well, we have some questions for you about some of the characters. And one of them that is quite aggravating is our sheriff. And well, here's the thing. He aggravates and then he's kind of like shows up at the right moment and does the right thing. And then he's back to being aggravating. And it's kind of like this back and forth. So how did you come up with him in kind of that back and forth with him?
Well, first of all, he was a character that was there out of necessity. And then the deeper I got into his character, like with book, I guess we really see him more in book three, in that because his core, at his core, he wants justice and peace, which makes him a good sheriff. However, he struggles with how to accomplish that. And his definition of justice and fairness may not be the same as everybody else's. And a lot of that comes from his backstory with his dad and how his dad valued certain things and didn't value other things, and the wedge that was between them because of some of those things. So in book, in A Convenient Escape, the book with Dan and Lily, we see how his situation is a little bit deeper than just his backstory. There's also current circumstances in his story. This is not a big secret, I guess, for those of you that haven't read. Early in the book, A Convenient Escape, you find out that the sheriff's wife is an alcoholic. She is very mean. She is a character that you struggle with. So I hope that gives a little more insight into why the sheriff, like, he has this drive for justice and truth. But some of that is hazy because he looks at it from a different angle than most people do.
Yes, and you're right. The backstory on him that comes out paired with what he's dealing with in the present, it does help you better understand him. But he is still one that you love to hate, maybe. You love when he comes in and he, does deliver that justice in the way that most of us consider justice being served, right? But in other ways, you're like frustrated with him. I would agree, like in book three, The Convenient Escape, I think the father-daughter relationship that is exposed is kind of heartbreaking a little bit. But you did a really good job. We still love the story. He was just one throughout the series that we're like, we gotta ask Sarah what she was thinking on the
Yeah,
sheriff.
he's a complicated character. And I remember when I was first plotting for A Less Convenient Path, the story with Cutie and Mariana, I really wanted to give him, well, for plot purposes, I needed him to be a thorn in their side. But I didn't want it to be this blanket, like he was just had this racial situation with the Native Americans, which is true to the period, but I didn't want that to be his driving motivation. He sees her as a challenge to the peace, and that's why he's not okay with that situation, is because he thinks she's a rabble-rouser because of the way people feel about Native Americans, not necessarily himself personally.
And I thought that was an interesting twist because typically you would say it's because in that time period it's just it's a racial issue, but you took it as like he really didn't care that she was an Indian. What he cared about was the fact her presence created disruption in his
Problems,
town. So you did a really good job with that. The other
Thanks.
thing we thought you did an outstanding job with, you pulled in these historical figures, right, into a few of them, and you did a really good job of bringing them in, but not diving too deep into them, right? So do you want to share a few of those and maybe why you chose to pull them in to those stories?
I love in my books to take my fictional story or my characters and weave them together with actual history. And some of my books feature that more than others do, but this series in particular does that very well. I mean, does it a lot. So in the first book, we have an appearance from Billy the Kid, which I had chosen where this was going to take place. And then I did research on the Outlaws because I thought, wouldn't it be fun if an outlaw showed up? And I discovered that Billy the Kid, he was Kid Antrim at the time, was in this area of Arizona. This town, it's a fictional town that it takes place in called Wharton City. And it is really close to Camp Grant, not very far from Tucson, a little southeast of Tucson is where it would have been located. And there was a town there at one point when the railroad came through, and then it just eventually disappeared. That happened to a lot of towns out west, but that's where Wharton City comes from. And so I thought, oh, that's really neat how that fits into that story. And then when I finished the story, I'm like, okay, that story's done. But then when it came to A Less Convenient Path, I wanted to address what was happening with the Native Americans at this time in a way that wasn't too hard, but showed some truth about it. So there were Native American groups at that time being put onto reservations. And so that's where Mariana's character comes from. This Native American group that not a lot of people have heard of, the Tohono O'odham.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it, but I know how to spell it.
Yes.
But this group of Native Americans that moved, a lot of them moved into Mexico because the ones that were still in the U.S. were being forced onto reservations. So we visit that a little bit later with Geronimo, is featured in one of the books. And we also see some of the events from the shootout at the OK Corral in one of the books. And my thoughts about it was that these were the side stories that are not featured, but they were happening tangentially to these big events. For example, one of the ranch hands and Brandon's sister are in Tombstone at the time when the shootout at the OK Corral happens. So they interact with Wyatt Earp and some of these other figures. Not heavy-handed, though. I didn't want to breathe too much, what I call breathing life, into these real people on the page. I tend to shy away from that as much as I can, but it was just necessary in these books to give them some life on the page.
I think I totally understand what you're talking about, because you don't want to give them too much because they were real people, right? Mm-hmm. And you don't want to like misrepresent them. And so, but I thought you did a really good job. So they have, it's Cutie. Cutie is the writer, right? Did I?
No, that's Slim.
Slim
is the one from the Tombstone story.
That's right. So he just kind of has a bump in with Wyatt Earp, but really Wyatt Earp was just trying to help him get rid of a guy that was mm-hmm. bugging him, and it was very casual, nothing deep there. And then the other scene is you don't actually see the shootout. You're over here in an alley where he's trying to protect mm-hmm. her while all these mm-hmm. shots are going off. So yeah, you did a really good job with that.
Thanks.
And we enjoyed it. So
good.
I think your other readers probably enjoy it too. So, and then, when you look at your series as a whole, is there one story that you feel like is your favorite, or one character that was your favorite?
The favorite character is always the one I'm writing right now. So I would say probably the heroine from the last book that's coming out in May. She is a very complicated character from a complicated situation. And so one of the things that I'm hoping people will pick up in that book is that both can be true, because we're complicated people, right? We can have things that we're strong in and things that we're challenged by. And so that doesn't make me a good person or a bad person. It makes me a person that has complicated issues. And so I feel like sometimes when I read fiction, especially the sweeter side, the characters aren't so complicated. And there's a place for that. There's absolutely an audience for that. But I like to see that someone can struggle and overcome from their faith, from God, being a part of their story, working through them and around them in their story. And so I really like how she moves through the novel and her arc. Her name is, oh my goodness, I just wrote it. I can't even remember because I've moved on to Emma.
Yeah, that's right. You're going on to the next, right?
Yeah, yeah. So you'll find out her name when the book comes out.
Okay, all right. Well, you know what, though? That is something we talked about in our book club, too, that you just do a really good job of building deep characters. Like, you're the romance and inspiration is so well balanced with the historical piece, right? And it and the inspiration is just woven into their daily life, so it just feels natural. But then the characters, the depth that you give your characters makes them so relatable, right? Like there were so many times when we're like, oh, I can feel what she's feeling because I've been in that spot, right? Or I've struggled with something similar, like Slim's insecurity in his writing. I mean, come on, we've all dealt with an insecurity of some kind.
Yeah.
And just thinking like you're not good enough, for sure. I will say also you're in that one, An Inconvenient Acquaintance. Her heroine, and I cannot think of her name either, so I
Ada.
Apologize. Yes.
It's Ada.
Yes. We had fun with her when we talked about book club because, you know, you have her set up between two guys, basically. She's trying to decide, you know, who's the best suit. Of course, we all know it's Slim. But we did some red flag, green flag. What we loved about that was, so like I would read a little blurb, but I wouldn't say which guy she was interacting with. And the ladies had to throw a red flag or a green flag based on what the guy was saying or doing. And it just kind of led into this conversation of when you are in that courting stage of a relationship, you really need to be paying attention. Because if there are too many red flags popping up, this is not the person for you. So you did a really good job. We appreciated the way you wrote it.
Thanks. I can still hear in my head that other male character in the triangle. Stanford A. Wilmot the Third. That's how he says his name.
Oh yes. Yeah, he was quite a character for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then in your less convenient arrangement. So this is, and again, I am terrible about remembering character names because like you, I've moved on to the next one.
Yeah.
But your heroine, she has so much on her plate. Do you want to share a little bit about that one?
Yeah, she struggles with a mom that is dealing with some sort of dementia type situation. So the mom is who is left for her. This actually is a throwback to the very first book. The banker that you love to hate in the first book turns out to be the father of the heroine of book number 7. And so he's made this decision to run off with money, embezzlement, basically. So she's left with her mentally decaying mother and a bank situation with her house, the only home she has, the only way she has to take care of her mother. As well, the town has shunned her for the largest part because of what her father did, which is very different for our mindset today. We take individuals as they are, and we don't really look at it in the same way that the sins of the father taint the children. But at this time period, absolutely, this is the way it was. You were guilty by association for the most part, but she's got a lot weighing on her. And so I have a dear friend who was in a similar situation where her mother was just degrading mentally from dementia. And so putting myself in her place, knowing that my sweet friend and walking with my sweet friend through that. So that was kind of the inspiration for that situation, and how wearying it is mentally, emotionally, physically, not feeling like you can close your eyes for 2 seconds to go to sleep, wanting so desperately for help that is not there. And so the help comes through the hero who is kind of another one of those characters that you're like, I don't know about you, but he's not my favorite hero, but he shows up and he comes through when it really matters. And so I think in romance, we want strong male characters. And I think a lot of people hear that and think, well, of course he's going to be muscular. But I think what's more important for our male characters in romance is that they have an inner strength that the heroine can lean into and can pull from when her strength runs out. And so I think that is really something that we see with this character, Sadie. This whole time I'm like, what is her name? What is her name? Starts with an S. Yes. Sadie. Yeah. Sadie.
Yeah. And I would agree, when you first meet him, he's not one that you were like, oh, I really like him. He's kind of like, yeah, I don't know. He kind of, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of a dandy, and he doesn't, he's from the upper class, and he likes that about himself. So,
Yes, that is a great way to put it. Yes.
yeah. So Wharton City's very rustic. It's too rustic for him.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. But you know what? You're right. He doesn't fit like the others in the are like ranch hands, you know, obviously. They work with their hands, they're out there, you know, getting dirty. And but she really needed someone who had his knowledge and experience and background. So they pair
Yeah.
very well together.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
So, as your readers read this series, what is your hope? Like, what is something you hope they walk away from when they finish this the series or the any of the books?
Yeah. I really hope they walk away with this experience from the book, of course, but also this greater awareness that even though we go through tough stuff, we walk through the valley of shadow and death. We walk through the valley of hardship and trial, which can be harder sometimes than the valley of shadow and death. But to stick around and push through, and knowing when to push through and knowing when to lean into those around you, because this series, more than my other series, create this community of the people that live at the Miller Ranch, and they're there for each other, they support each other, they take in the strays. And so I think those are the main things that with God by your side and going before you and coming behind you, you can make it through a lot more than you think you can, and that we are built for community. So, yeah.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. I love that. That's wonderful. And I would say, I think you're doing a really good job in this series of building that community and just knowing you can make it. And you actually, when you get to the other side and look back, you can actually be grateful for what you went through, knowing like it brought not only brought you closer to God, but it refined you in His
Yes,
image.
absolutely.
Yeah. So we also started, Sarah, since the last time you were with us, we started these fun little end the interview with some rapid fire questions, and they're just fun things about your writing. Okay.
Okay.
But if I throw one at you and you're not sure, we can skip it. It's no big deal. Okay. So one of the ones we'd like to ask is, are you a plotter or a pantser?
I am a planter. I like to do a lot of character development, then a very loose outline that I generally don't follow because the characters make their own decisions sometimes. So I want to be a plotter, but by heart I'm a pantser.
You understand. And are you a morning writer or a night owl or somewhere in between?
I am a night owl. But my primary energy time for writing is actually like from about the dinner hour till the bedtime hour. However, with my family situation, my kids, that's when they would be coming home from school and we'd have dinner and those kind of things. So we used to work it out that my husband would give me a couple nights a week, not give me, but he would take care of all the dinner stuff and let me kind of slip away to my writing cave. But I started doing morning writing, and it really is the second best time for me. That time I write from 7 to 9 in the morning, and as hard as it is to get up, those pages are really good quality, I think.
Yeah. I tend to, I'd be the same, more of a morning person, but I also, like you, I mean, you have a family to take care of, right? I'm working, so generally for me, it's I can't work in the mor or write in the morning, so it's that those evening hours. So yeah, completely understand. All right, are you, is it tea or coffee?
Coffee. 100% coffee. I don't mind tea every now and again, but coffee. Hard coffee all the way.
I love it. I think that's even in your bio, isn't it? On
It is.
your, yes, I
Coffee
thought so.
loving. Coffee loving.
Do you drink it? I just have to ask, like, do you have a favorite latte or type, or do you just go straight coffee?
I am a latte girl. I don't mind drinking drip coffee at all. That's primarily what I drink. But when I get a latte, it's a caramel latte or a caramel macchiato. Hot. I will do an ice drink like in the middle of summer if it's right in the middle of the day, but I am more of a hot coffee person.
All right. What's one thing that's always on your desk while you write?
I'm looking around at my desk. Other than my laptop, I have these jars here. They're really interesting. They're shaped like coffee pots and they have beads that are shaped like coffee beans. And this just goes to show you how much I like coffee. So I have one that has a lot in it. And this is my doing jar. And this is my done. So for every 100 words I write, I get to move a coffee bean over. And it's just a little way that I kind of gamify my writing. And so that is always on my desk.
That is so cool. And it's a nice visual for you too, to like see how much you've accomplished. Because sometimes it's hard to visualize that, right?
I think. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
I love that. That is probably the most interesting thing someone has shared that's been on their desk. I love it. All right. So I know we've got the next book for the Convenient Risks series coming out, but then share a little bit about what's coming, what you're working on now, what's coming out next after that.
Yeah. I am working on the third book in that Railway Romance series. And the first book in the series took place kind of between Chicago and Memphis. And then the next book in the series took us to the Grand Canyon, to the hotel there, the El Tovar, where there was a Harvey house. And so my heroine was a Harvey girl. And then she had another Harvey girlfriend named Emma that were kind of following her story out to California, where her aunt has no children and has married this horse rancher and has this huge hacienda and has invited Emma to come out and be her companion. And the dad, Emma's dad, is kind of pushing her to be like, oh, you could be the heir of all this. So she's in a complicated situation, but she was exchanging letters with a man in the second book and then has lost touch with him between. So we don't know yet why she lost touch with him. Did she make the decision or did he stop writing? So yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. But I'm kind of following the railroad. So one of the pieces of the story is the way she likes to give of herself and aid the Chinese immigrants. There were Chinese immigrant camps that followed the railroad because they were cheaper labor and known to be a little more skilled than the general laborer in the United States. And so they were heavily used on the railroad. So she visits her Aunt Penn is the one that was really had a heart for these individuals and the things they were lacking. And so she goes with her aunt and she falls in love with this ministry that her aunt has of giving to people that need, that are in serious need. So that's what I'm writing now.
That sounds very interesting. And I love reading about the Harvey girls. That was just such an interesting setup that they had. Really, like all the little things that they did, you know, you turn a cup a certain way. And like, I mean, it's pretty in depth.
Yeah, I read stories of Fred Harvey, who was the man that started the Harvey houses, that he would come into one of the Harvey House restaurants. And if the table was, if anything on the table was off, even the tiniest bit, he would completely, just sweep his arm and be like, redo the table. So his service was a big deal for him, as well as presentation. That's why, for those of you that don't know, the Harvey girls were these restaurants and hotels were traveling out west with the railroad. And so they wanted women from the middle and upper classes out east to come and serve as servers, because the first servers in the Harvey houses were men. And he thought that if he brought the women out west, it would bring a sense of refinement and cause less fights. Apparently there were a lot of brawls in the restaurants because the west was just, you know, a bunch of guys unchecked, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fascinating, that period of history.
It is. How can our listeners connect with you?
Well, my website, sarahturnquist.com, you can fill out something on the contact page. My email is actually Sarah, without an H, sarah@sarahturnquist.com. And I love getting email. I answer every email I get that's not spam, but I do. I really enjoy interacting with readers. So you can find out more about my books there. You can sign up for my newsletter there. I do a lot of giveaways in my newsletter. I really like giving back to my readers because the readers are the reason that we do what we're doing. You know, it's a calling from God, but it's to reach the readers. And so I just love my readers. I really do.
And again, guys, I will put a link to her website on the blog post for this episode so you can easily get there and sign up for her newsletter and just connect further with Sarah. But thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I didn't mention, but I do want to mention, the first book in the Convenient Risk series is free on ebook to everyone. So whatever platform you buy your ebooks on, whether it's Amazon, my website, Kobo, wherever you buy it, there it's free everywhere on ebook.
You know what? I saw that on your website right now. It does show that. Mm-hmm. But a quick question. I know we can purchase our books straight from you. Can we also purchase mm-hmm. the hard copies as well, or paperback?
Yes, you can purchase paperbacks through my website, and you can purchase audiobooks through my website.
Are these on audiobook?
Yeah.
My goodness, I didn't even catch that. Okay, guys, yeah, so she's got okay. all the formats. And we've talked about that on the podcast because everybody likes it a little different. Some like the ebook, mm-hmm. some like paperback, some prefer audio.
And I will tell you, Cook is my favorite voice that my voice artist does. She is so fun. And Cook is the favorite voice that she does too. So Cook is in this series and she is just, I would say precious, but she's kind of at a hard edge of precious.
Yes, I would agree. I would agree. Awesome. Okay, so you definitely guys want to head over to Sarah's website today yeah. and check all of that out. But yeah, I'm so glad we got to have you back. And I have a feeling that we'll have you back again on another series. So thank you.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, please consider sharing our podcast. Every share helps us reach more readers and authors like you. Until next time, happy and blessed reading and writing.